friend, a colleague. So much fun when you teach people and they surpass you. It's kind of when you launch people and then they just do it the steroids. But you didn't. I mean, I never thought a book of it, and Karen wrote the book. And LC reaches so many women at our church. Someday you got to sit at her table. She has this thing called newcomers dinners, and I've always abused her to have dinner for my guys. But you go to Elsie's, the menu is up there. So she's the best of the Swiss and the French when it comes to cooking is order. But then everything is kind of exquisite, four courses, and there's never just one dessert. There's like three. And
I'm in.
The only problem, yeah, she's allergic to wine. But that's a lament. Not my problem. But I've had the privilege of marrying one of her daughters, and then now in the process of another, and another conferences we've done together. But I won't go anywhere without her, because you can just see with these ladies, it's like, it's one thing to teach this stuff, but when you realize it's happening at whole other levels with people, and they can articulate it better than the pastor, it's just like, yes. So come on up, LC. Will you welcome her? Buongiorno. Now, how am I supposed to put that on your seat? How's that?
That's good.
Okay. And she wants the next slide, actually.
Just thought I'd show you my family. That's what you get out of going to retreat. So I'll tell you quickly, that's my husband on the far left. His name's Daniel, he's a scientist. And then my daughter Julia, she next to me, she's my middle daughter. Then my daughter Vanessa in the white dress, it's her engagement party. And then my daughter Lydia and my son-in-law Noah on the right. And then her Vanessa's fiance Mircea, who's from Romania, he's in the white shirt. So that was taken last year. My daughters are all out of college, they're working, no grandchildren yet. And yeah, that's kind of where we are. And I'll tell you a little bit about my family. I just thought I'd get that out of the way so you have some perspective of who I am and where I am in life. I'm paying my vow right now by telling you my story. And it's not just my story, but the purpose here is to tell you how the Psalms have redefined my life. And I can't tell you that unless you know where I've been. So if you need to see the chaos before you can see the glory. So I'm going to tell you about the chaos. I'm Chinese. I was born in Taiwan. My family immigrated to the United States in 1970. So I was 3 years old when we came to the United States. And we were your typical Chinese immigrant family. We moved to San Diego, California. And I grew up in San Diego my entire life, elementary school, junior high, high school. I was also, because being Chinese, my mom and dad wanted to keep the culture. So I went to Chinese school during the week and on the weekends. So I had American school, then Chinese school. And I spoke Chinese at home, I spoke English at school. And I lived this double life. In Chinese culture, education is very important. That's why my parents brought us to America, to get a better education, to have a better life. To have a better life than they would have. So there was a lot of pressure. Get good grades, perform, do well, be successful. That was ingrained in me from a young age, even though my father is pastor. So I grew up as a pastor's kid, in the church my entire life, in Chinese churches. I'm from a charismatic background. My father was Assemblies of God pastor, and it was Assemblies of God missionaries who converted him. So that's my background, my upbringing. And something very typical of Chinese families, but probably typical of a lot of families, is we didn't communicate. We were told what to do, and we did it. And That was my life. We didn't talk about our feelings. We didn't talk about things that bothered us, things that scared us. We didn't talk. So fast forward, I was 10 years old. It was Saturday morning. It was time to go to Chinese school. I hated Chinese school. It was already tough enough learning English, and now you have to learn Chinese. And I dreaded going to Chinese school. So I woke up Saturday morning, and I was in a lot of pain, and I was crying. And so my mom thought I just didn't want to go to Chinese school. So she yelled at me, and she said, "Elsie, get out of bed, come on." And I'm crying, I'm like, "No, I don't want to go, my stomach hurts. And she's like, "Come on, Elsie, get out of bed." And we had this fight while I'm lying in the bed. So she says, "Fine, don't go to Chinese school." So she takes my siblings and she brings them to Chinese school, and I'm in bed by myself for about 5 hours. My mom and dad come back, and I'm still in bed, and I'm still crying, and I'm still in pain. And they're thinking, what's wrong? So then they thought, well, maybe there is something serious. So they brought me to the hospital. They did a whole bunch of scans, and by the time they were done, they had found a tumor wrapped around my ovary the size of a grapefruit. It weighed 2.5 kilos, about 5 pounds. And they said to my parents, "She needs surgery right away." So I'm in the emergency room, I'm lying there after having all these scans done on me, and my mom and dad just said, "You have to stay in the hospital. You're gonna have surgery, we'll be back." I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what surgery was. Remember, I'm an immigrant kid. My English is not that great. We communicate in Chinese. The doctors are speaking English. It's like a foreign language to me. So, okay, I'll stay in the hospital and have surgery, whatever that is. And so I don't really remember very much. I think part of me kind of blocked out that. I have a few images of being on the gurney and so forth. I don't remember a whole lot, but I had the surgery. I wasn't told what I had. I wasn't even told why I needed surgery. I just obeyed my parents. They said it, I did it. And then afterwards, when I was in recovery, I heard something about the word, "It might be, we might need to give her chemo." And then some time went past, and sure enough, what I didn't know at that time was they had found cancer in the tumor. So I had to have chemo. And my mom and dad didn't tell me what chemotherapy was. They just said, "You need chemo." And they didn't even tell me I had cancer. They said, "You have a benign tumor." In fact, I didn't find out I had a cancerous tumor until I was 33 years old, because my parents never told me. It was a new gynecologist that I had changed to. And I had been telling this crazy story to, and she didn't believe me. So anyway, she pulled up my hospital records, and I found out I actually had cancer. So back at the hospital, I was told I was going to have this chemo, and I remember sitting in the doctor's office, and they were talking about the side effects. And this is back in the day when they were first inventing chemo. This is not the chemo you get now. This is really hard, violent, aggressive stuff. So I heard something about hair loss, but you know, things didn't really register, and I didn't ask questions, and my parents didn't give answers, or didn't even anticipate any questions. So I started the chemo, and because it was this experimental chemo, the scientist who invented it actually administered it to me. And because it was experimental, I had to stay in the hospital during the week that I was given chemo, because they had to run tests on me and take down a lot of data. My husband now has since pulled up the kind of chemo that I was given, and there was a radioisotope in that chemo, and when he works in the lab, he works with that radioisotope in a fume hood behind a lead shield. He wears a lead apron, and it's very dangerous, and the Geiger counter is going off the charts. And he said, "They put that in your bloodstream, Elsie." So you can't imagine how powerful that was. So that's what I started getting for one week every month. And I started immediately to get sick. I threw up all the time. By the time I only did 6 months of the chemo because it was literally killing me. And I only weighed 40 pounds and I was 10 years old.
Wow.
So I became a skeleton through the chemo. And just you feel things in your mouth, you have scars up your arms because I was always in the hospital and they were always poking me. And what was hard about being in the hospital was my mom never came to visit me. She was busy with my siblings and she just kind of left me alone there. And I felt very abandoned. And then the morning that I began to lose my hair was probably the most traumatizing morning in my life. I was out, it was time to go to church. I had put on this green polyester dress with white lace. I had this yellow hairbrush. I mean, this memory is seared in my mind. And I was out on the porch because I was losing strands of hair. And my mom would say, oh, go out on the porch, you're making a mess. So I was out there, and I remember just standing there. I was just this obedient, you know, Chinese kid doing what I was told. And I was trying not to make a mess in the house. And I'm out on the porch, and I'm brushing my hair. And as I brush my hair, I see a clump of long hair. My hair was down to my waist. And I see a clump of hair in my hair. And I touched my head, and I feel this bald spot. And I am freaking out. I'm screaming. And my mom comes running out. She looks at the porch. She sees me with the clump of hair. I'm like, Mom! And she goes, oh, it's begun. And so she dragged me into the house, took me into the bathroom, grabbed a pair of sewing scissors, and she just started cutting my hair without any talking, without any explanation. She goes, all I heard was, it's begun. And she started cutting my hair. And if that wasn't enough, she put my head in the sink and she started scrubbing my hair and washing it because she wanted to help the process. She's like, look, if you're gonna lose your hair, it's starting today, we're getting it done with. So she did that twice. And then I went to my bedroom and I was a wreck. I just lay there and cried. And then I heard my parents arguing. My mom was upset because she couldn't go to church. So my dad took my siblings to church, and my mom was stuck with me at home. And then she brought me to Sears. I had to buy a wig. And she did it with such unfeeling duty. And the lady at Sears, I remember taking off my hat, I was so embarrassed. And the woman looked at me and went, oh! Because back then, they didn't have that many chemo patients. And so she didn't even say anything. She probably thought I was abused. But anyway, she put a wig on me, and then I went to school the very next day. And I wore my wig right above my eyebrows. I wore it like a hat, because I didn't know how to wear a wig. No one told me. So I was kind of sent to school like that. You can imagine going to school and you're in fifth grade and the teasing that went on until my hair grew back. So that really was the most traumatizing event of my life. And that just ruined, I mean, any self-esteem I had went to the toilet. Any confidence I had went to the toilet. Any love that I had received, disappeared. Because from that day on, my mom and I just kind of separated. Her lack of love for me in the hospital, her lack of love for me during this whole process just separated me from my mother. I'm going to read to you a poem that I wrote when Brian first I think I'll continue with my story. So, because I was separated from my mom and I had this huge hole in my heart from not having her love, I started going crazy. I was looking for some kind of love to fill that huge gap. And my dad was very passive. He was a little scared of my mom. And he didn't, even though he's a pastor, he was very strong on the pulpit. If you ever heard my dad preach, he's very charismatic. But at the home, he was a little puppy dog, and my mom ruled the house. And she was very scary. So even though he showed love and he tried to be very loving and kind to me, it wasn't enough. My mom was so strong and I needed her love and I didn't have it. So by the time I got to high school, I was living a total double life. Now it wasn't just the Chinese and the American, but it was the Christian and the like a pagan life that I was living. In high school. So I was looking for love. I was looking for love mostly with men. I was totally boy crazy. I was the girl that you don't ever want to raise in your household. I was the one who climbed out the window at night to meet up with guys, and I hid boys in my closet. I mean, it was just terrible. I was that girl. And it was always just never feeling confident, never feeling that I was enough. I felt like this, even though my hair had grown back, I always felt bald. Mm-hmm. So that's how I felt. I walked around bald. And I grew my hair long, but I was still bald inside. So that brought me through high school and college, and I just got more and more rebellious, more and more promiscuous. My self-worth was in the gutter. And it was during that time I met my husband, Daniel. He was not a Christian, and you know what? I didn't care. He loved me, and he was very kind to me. And of all the men that I dated, that I could have landed with, God, in his mercy, gave me Daniel. Because I've got the best husband. He was very kind, generous, and he's just a sweet man. He's a strong guy, but he's genuine, and his love is encompassing, and he didn't make me feel bald. And every guy that I dated made me feel that way. But with Daniel, I could blossom and become somebody. So I was gonna marry him. I didn't care if he didn't know Jesus. I was gonna marry him. So I did, and my father, although I would never have done this with my kids, he actually let me marry him, and he walked me down the aisle, and he turned around and married us and gave us his full blessing. God bless my dad. My mother, on the other hand, a week before the marriage, said to me, "You're getting unequally yoked. Your marriage is doomed." So that I had that, and then I had my dad walking down the aisle. And you kind of live with that tension. So we moved to Switzerland. My husband is Swiss. So right at 7 months after we got married, we moved to Switzerland. I lived there for 6.5 years. And all our daughters were born in Switzerland. Because I only have one ovary, they had to remove my right ovary. I was told I might not be able to have children, or it would be very difficult. Well, again, God in his mercy allowed me to get pregnant. Right away. I mean, I basically got pregnant the week I got married. 9 months later, I had my daughter, Lydia. So I had Lydia, and then 18 months later, Julia, 18 months later, Vanessa, and then we stopped. And Switzerland, I thought, would be my dream fulfilled. I'm moving to Europe. I'm going to sit at a cafe with a notebook and write poems or whatever, you know, just have the idyllic life. And I've got my wonderful husband who loves me. And I just thought I had the dream. But then I get there, and I'm pregnant, and I've got to find a gynecologist, and they don't speak English, and I learned High German. I did not learn Swiss German, so I'm really in trouble. And I was lonely. I'd never felt so lonely, so I thought. And my husband was working. He came home when it was dark, about 6:30. So I had to spend the whole day by myself. What was I going to do all day in Basel? So it was a very, very difficult time. So I had not gone to church in 4 years, the 4 years I was in college. And I said to Daniel, I want to go to church. And he's like, what? We never go to church. And I said, I know, but I want to go to church. But I wanted to go to church to find friends. I didn't want to go to church to find God. I needed good friends who spoke English. So I went to the one English-speaking church in Basel. And he came with me. And that first Sunday, I'll never forget it, there was a Chinese lady, the age of my mother, who came marching up to me after church with her finger pointed at me. And she goes, and she's like, are you Chinese? And I said, yes. She goes, did you marry a Swiss? And I said, yes. She goes, give me your phone number. And she said, you need to go to Bible study. That was so bizarre, but being a dutiful Chinese daughter, I her name's Loretta, and Loretta called me every day for 2 weeks. You need to go to Bible study. You need to go to Bible study. I'm like, I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a baby in a month and a half. I cannot go to Bible study. And she said, you need to go to Bible study. What's your address? So then she comes to my house with another lady from Finland. And they come and they pester me about going to Bible study. So I just said, okay, I'll go. I'll go. So the Bible study they took me to was BSF. BSF in Switzerland. Who would have thought? So I go to BSF and I thought to myself, I'll go one time and then I'm out of here. So I walk in, and there's this missionary lady, Evelyn Swanson, and she says, well, you can't really go in. They're having their discussion time. You can't go in there. You have to come sit in here. I'm going to tell you the rules about BSF. So I thought, oh, okay. And I didn't want to be there anyways. And then she starts telling me these rules, and I thought, oh, I am so not staying in BSF, you know. I had this bad attitude. So after that, I thought, okay, I'll just go, I'll say hi to Loretta, I'll say hi to the Finnish lady, and then they know I showed up and I'm done. So I sit there, and they're already into their, a few weeks into teaching. They're in John chapter 4, and it's the story of the woman at the well, and she's thirsty, and Jesus knows her whole story. She's got 5 husbands. She's ashamed. That's why she's coming at noon to get water. And he says, I'm going to give you water so that you never thirst again. And I sat there, and I knew that was me. I was so thirsty. I've been thirsty for so long, I didn't even realize it. I've gotten used to being thirsty. And I heard that, and God's word just washed over my heart and my soul. And I don't know what I did for the next 2 years at BSF, because I just cried. I cried for 2 years. Just, I was a prodigal. I was finally coming home. And my father's arms were wide open. No judgment. Just love and acceptance. And I had only tears. So I came back to relationship with God. I realized after that 2 years of working on myself and coming back to the Lord, oh my goodness, I married a non-Christian. That's like a whole other story. I went on a conversion project to convert my husband, which didn't work. So Daniel came to Christ on his own. If you want to know the story, you can come talk to me later. But he came to know the Lord in 2001. And it's a scientist's journey to find Jesus. And that's by God's grace, not by anything I've ever done. So I came back to the Lord, and then I realized I need to make some amends to my mom. I started writing her these letters of apology. I would remember something, I would write her a letter, and then I would not get a response. I write her another letter. So I wrote her a whole series of letters. I really wanted to restore my relationship with my mom, but I had no communication. We moved to the Bay Area in 1997. I wrote my last letter to my mother when we moved. I wrote her another letter. And then she finally, after 6 years of writing letters, she calls me. She says, "Elsie, enough with the letters, okay? It's finished, all right? Okay, Mom, okay." And that was it. That's the only thing she has ever said about the letters I wrote to her. So I just kind of went on. I ignored all that stuff in my life, and I got busy with the kids. You know, you're taking them to school, you're volunteering, you get involved in PTA, all that stuff. So that's what I did. But all my past, all the muck, I just squashed it. I just put it inside, and I thought, I'm busy. I have to do stuff in my life. And so I just kept going like a rat in a wheel, you know? And then in 2003, Ryan called me, and he had said, "Oh, Elsie, would you like to be an intern in our church intern program?" And it was the thing that I had been praying for. So I joined the intern program, and then first year we did the New Testament, second year we read Old Testament, and then Brian taught the Psalms. And what you heard today, that's what he taught me. So I remember sitting there in the class, and he taught Psalm 142. And then he said, "Okay, this is your assignment, this theme of being alone. I want you now to go home and think about a time in your life when you were alone. And I want you to write about it." And that was the assignment. So I went home, and I wrote about being alone. And I thought, "Oh, I know exactly what I'm going to write about. I'm going to write about being in Switzerland." So I had started my poem, and as I was writing it, I didn't feel honest. And I felt the Lord saying, "You got to go back farther than that. You haven't, that was not the first time you felt alone. And so I'm going to read you my poem." And God is not in my poem. It was pretty much all about me. So you know how David had that first section all about me? Well, this whole poem's about just me. So, I'm on. That Sunday morning, etched in my memory forever. One stroke of the brush, a clump of hair, scared out of my mind. No idea what was happening. Loneliness seeping in. "Mom, you cut off all my hair that morning. You didn't explain. You never warned me. My long locks gone. A bald little girl weeping on her bed. You left me there to cry. You left me alone. Shopping at Sears for a wig. Any would do. I did not understand what was happening, and you sent me to school the next day. I was ashamed, so ashamed, and you left me there to face the kids. I was teased, mocked, harassed. Boys spit into my wig. I went to the bathroom and sobbed. You left me there. More chemo, 1 week per month in the hospital. You never visited me. I wanted you, Mom. You left me alone. Desperate cry for help, a full tantrum, destroying my hospital room. You did not come. I was so alone, Mom. Why didn't you come? At home, siblings afraid of my bald head. I slept in the back room, night after night, a sad, frightened little girl, frustrated, scared, alone. Graduation day, sixth grade, a proud moment for all but me, because you took away my wig, my hair, 2 inches long all around, wig tan on my forehead. I was completely ashamed You made me graduate like that. No pictures. I was ashamed. I was alone. That day you cut off my hair, Mom, that was the day you left me. That was the day I lost my mom, and I was alone in this big world. Now I'm 40. I am not alone anymore. No, I am not alone. But I miss you, Mom. I missed you all my life. After I read that poem to my class, Brian just looked at me and he said, "You have more." So I had a Bible study. I was actually leading two Bible studies in my neighborhood at that time, teaching the Maryland interns. So I spent the next 2 years writing poetry and teaching the Psalms to my ladies. And I spent 2 years lamenting my childhood. A year processing all the stuff with my mom, and then a year processing all the stuff I did to myself. It was very healing, and it really gave me a rhythm and pattern in life, because I learned that when I'm facing something difficult, whether it's with my spouse or my children, I need to take time to be with God and not just talk to him, but let him talk to me. And he talks to me through the poetry and through the writing. One of my favorite verses in the Bible in Joel says, Joel 2, 12 and 25, "Return to me with all your heart and with fasting, weeping and mourning, and rend your heart, not your garments." And then it says, "Then I will make up to you for the years the swarming locusts have eaten." And that's what God has done for me in the Psalms. But you have to come and be willing to rend your heart, to rip it to shreds, and you offer it to the Lord, and he will redeem the years the locusts have eaten. So I want to just share with you very quickly now some things God taught me by spending so much time in the Psalms. And now, because I've spent 2 years reading the Psalms and writing them, now when I come to any scripture, like right now we're in the book of Proverbs with my Bible study ladies, but even Proverbs inspired me to write poetry. We were in Samuel last year. Of course, that one inspired you. That's David's story. But even when we're in the New Testament, God's word is inspiring you, and it speaks to your heart, and poetry can just come out of that. So I've written lots and lots of poems. Not very good, but I've written a lot. And I just wanted to tell you about three or four things that I learned by writing poetry and going through this process of lament to confidence to thanksgiving to praise. I realized through poetry that God gave me three daughters. I wanted boys. I wanted five sons, because I didn't know how to deal with women, because I had this relationship with my mom, or non-relationship. So but I knew how to interact with boys. So I wanted a whole, you know, little army of men in my house. And God gave me three girls. And I have the most amazing relationship with my daughters. And so by giving me daughters, God was redeeming that lost relationship that I didn't have with my mom. My mother in 1996 had a brain tumor. And it was at the back of her brain stem. And all they had to do was just shave this little section of her hair for the surgery. And in the hospital, my mom says, "Oh, just shave it all off. Hair is hair." And I sat there thinking, my mom's crazy. But then on the other hand, her words, "hair is hair." Somehow, God used that statement to really minister to me. And I realized that my mom is very practical. And perhaps what she did to me, even though it was in a very violent way, by cutting off my hair that morning, Perhaps it was just her being practical and it wasn't personal. And that somehow just took a level of that hurt away. And I wrote a poem about it. My mom had a mastectomy in 2001. And I went and sat in her hospital room all day long, every day until she came out. It was only 3 days. But still, I could do for my mom what she couldn't do for me. And then in 2009, there was a little girl who was the niece of one of the gals in my Bible study. And she was anorexic, and she was at El Camino Hospital in the children's ward. And my friend was telling us how horrible she felt that she put her niece there, but she couldn't visit her. So I said, oh, I'll go visit her. So I drove over there, and I went to pay a visit to Erica, this cute little 15-year-old redhead girl, and in comes this Chinese lady, and she's probably wondering, who is this? And as I was driving home, I just heard her prompting me and saying, you need to go now and visit Erica every day, because I'm going to redeem your childhood through Erica. So I went every day for 5 weeks to read to her and spend time with her. And then she actually came to live with us for a while. We had to help her gain some weight. So that was such a gift. And there's been all these little things in my life where God has redeemed my childhood and redeemed little parts of it that I thought were lost forever. But the Psalms helped me to see those things. If I wasn't writing, if I wasn't in his word and writing back my prayers to him, I wouldn't be noticing what God's doing and how he's doing it. And the Psalms have helped me to do that. So I'd like to read to you my most recent poem. I have a little dog. Her name's Millie. She's a golden doodle. But before Millie, I had the most evil dog. And her name was Bella. And we could have called her Cujo because she was just awful. And after we put her down, we accounted that she had bit 40 people. We should have put her down earlier. So when we prayed for Millie, my whole Bible study, she pretty much bit every woman in my Bible study. So they said, we're going to pray, Elsie, that you're going to get a really good dog next time. So Millie is such a gift. She knows how to, in Hebrew, betach. She knows how to trust. She puts her whole weight in you. She's the sweetest dog. So I take her to the Ronald McDonald House. We are part of Furry Friends. And we visit the children because those children who have cancer, who are waiting for transplants, they speak to me. And so I go there and I bring my little Millie girl and we go and we hang out with the kids and it's beautiful. And I call it my monthly lament because it causes me to go back to that place every month, to go back to my childhood. And it's amazing, but it's very redeeming for me. So I think I'll just, I met this little girl at the Ronald McDonald House last month. And I came home and I was crying all the way home. And then at the dinner table, I was trying to tell my husband about it and I couldn't stop crying. And when I'm crying all the time, I know there's something in there. So I had to write about it. And I just was kind of avoiding it because I don't want to go to that space, you know, but I said, okay, I'm just going to do it because I keep crying. And I was telling my girlfriend, we were going on a walk, and I couldn't talk about it. I just kept crying. So that was my trigger, like, okay, spend time with the Lord and figure out what's going on. So my poem's called Still Redeeming. The familiar house, the same dogs, the same kind of suffering, my monthly lament. This little girl, a victim to cancer, Chinese, 10 years old, just like me. Chemo-chapped lips, just like me. Both arms scarred with IV and blood draw holes, just like me. Parents lacking English and absent, just like me. But here she was, so unlike me. Head of hair, perhaps only the beginning, but still, all smiles, talkative, independent, somehow confident, rubbing Lily's tummy, and she says, "This is my happy place. I love dogs." I saw her anew. She was no victim. Cancer had not choked her spirit, at least not that day. Tears rolled up in my eyes. "Don't cry, Elsie, don't cry, not now." Here I was, ministering to myself, and myself ministering to me. God using her to redeem that little part of my childhood, the hospital childhood, through Erica and now through her. I wonder, how lovely are you, O God, who redeems the secret crevices of my soul, so I am left without crinkle or even slight crease, whole and beautiful, clean and straight. O Lord, what will you do next? And I realized it was making me cry, because God was showing me his beauty once again, that he is a God of redemption, and he wants to redeem each of us. None of us are insignificant to him. And so just to have that moment, I realized, you love me. And it just touches me again how much he loves me, how much he loves each of you. And that's what poetry's done for me. So thank you all for listening. And I'm sorry it took up so much time.